Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the online course for the ACE CPT exam. My name is Eddie Lester, here to take you through chapter 11. Specifically, we're going over the PowerPoint lecture. So let's go ahead and look at slide number one as we learn about chapter 11. Specifically, chapter 11 covers the cardiorespiratory system, cardiorespiratory training, specifically program design around, you know, how you as a personal trainer are going to develop a cardiorespiratory training program. So a lot of you probably have interest in the ability to understand, you know, what components make up a cardiorespiratory fitness program, how you can differentiate yourself to make sure that there's never plateau, and always also how, you know, this good effective cardiorespiratory training can lead to achieving fitness goals like body fat loss. So let's go ahead and move over to slide two as we kind of talk about the muscular system. And specifically, the muscular system does also have adaptations when performing cardiorespiratory exercise. So specifically, there's going to be an increase, and this is for, we'll say, steady state cardio. This is for, I'm going to go jog for 5 miles, or I'm going to jog for 20 minutes, that sort of thing. The muscular system, there's an increase in the number of type 1 muscle fibers. These are slow twitch. Specifically with endurance-based cardiorespiratory training. And the increase in size and number of the mitochondria within the type 1 muscle fibers. So the mitochondria are going to be the powerhouse of the cell, what gives the cell most of its energy, specifically in the oxidative system, oxidative energy system. Aerobic energy system. The type 1 muscle fibers become more abundant, as well as the size and number of the mitochondria. We want you to know that for the test. That is a direct muscular adaptation to endurance-based cardiorespiratory training. Also, there's capillaries around the recruited muscle fibers are enhanced, as well as the enhanced delivery of oxygenated blood due to those extra capillaries around those muscle fibers. All right. Slow twitch muscle fibers are for low intensity cardio, while fast twitch muscle fibers are going to be for high intensity cardio. There's two to three specific types of cardiorespiratory exercise. One of them is going to be extremely, we'll say, low intensity steady state cardio. Okay, you'll hear that's your elliptical, that's your basic cycling for 30 minutes at the same intensity level. That sort of easy, steady state cardio. Fast twitch muscle fibers become more active when you do what's called interval cardiorespiratory training or circuit cardiorespiratory training, in a sense that you are moving to a maximal effort or near maximal effort, and then you relax for a bit to recover. And the fast twitch muscle fiber, this would be something like doing sprints with a minute rest in between. That sort of higher intensity cardiorespiratory activity is going to enhance fast twitch muscle fibers. Fast twitch muscle fibers are larger, they're for more power, but they don't last as long as the slow twitch muscle fibers, as they don't have as many mitochondria. But yes, they are extremely powerful and therefore quick, effective movements. You could think of interval training like something like the game of football, where you have a play that runs, you go sprint down the field, try to catch a ball, and then that play's over, you rest for 45 seconds, and then you do it all over again. That's one good example. Basketball kind of falls in between the two steady states and interval. I would consider it more interval, but it's in that medium sort of jog down the court, have a shot, maybe need to jump up for a rebound or a slam dunk. That sounded pretty lame there, but jump up for a slam dunk. And then maybe even need to sprint down to play defense or sprint down on a fast break. So most sports typically do fall into a more interval style training, but steady state is great for enhancing the ability of oxygen delivery to the muscle fibers. That last bullet point under fast twitch muscle fibers are more for high intensity says that an increase in the number of anaerobic enzymes enhance anaerobic energy production. So there is an adaptation for the muscular system around interval training or explosive high intensity interval training or high intensity cardiorespiratory training. And that one of the main adaptations is that the anaerobic enzymes that enhance the anaerobic energy production become more abundant. All right, so let's flip over to scroll over to slide number 3 as we talk more about the cardiovascular system. So what adaptations occur in the cardiorespiratory or cardiovascular system from cardiorespiratory exercise? So the heart muscle is going to hypertrophy, specifically the chambers of the heart that pump the blood become hypertrophied, meaning those muscles become larger and stronger and allow for a larger stroke volume, meaning more volume pumped out of the heart per beat. Okay, so that is something we want you to know for the test is that one major adaptation from from cardiorespiratory training to the cardiovascular system is going to be an enlarged heart chambers or a hypertrophied heart chambers, allowing for a larger stroke volume. What is stroke volume? It is the volume of blood pumped out of the left ventricle per beat. Okay, the total blood pumped out is measured, and that's the stroke volume. What this leads to, a higher stroke volume leads to a higher cardiac output. Okay, cardiac output is the total volume of blood ejected from the heart in a minute's time. So that's heart rate times stroke volume in a or beats per minute times stroke volume, and that equals the cardiac output. But a higher cardiac output leads to a lower resting heart rate, basically, or a higher stroke volume leads to a lower resting heart rate. The example given in the book, and the one that we'll give here, is basically that you can imagine that the heart has about 5,000 milliliters needed to be pumped to the body per minute. Okay, that's an example sample, but it is around 5 liters or 5,000 milliliters. And that's what the body needs to maintain its normal function. If somebody has a low resting heart rate with a higher stroke volume, because they do a lot of cardiorespiratory exercise and they have a larger stroke volume, meaning more blood per beat, their heart does not have to work as hard because that volume per beat is higher. That's the first example there, the first bullet point. 50 beats per minute times 100 milliliters per beat, that's the stroke volume, equals 5,000 milliliters per minute, which is the needed volume of blood ejected from the heart to maintain normal body processes. The opposite is when somebody is deconditioned and they don't exercise their heart very often, or they don't do cardiorespiratory exercise often, and they have a lower stroke volume, such as 62.5 milliliters per beat, that requires a heart, or to get the same 5 liters per minute or 5,000 milliliters per minute, that heart needs to work at 80 beats per minute to pump the same amount of blood. Okay, so hopefully that made some sense in the sense that when you do cardiorespiratory exercise, you have hypertrophy to the heart muscle and the heart chambers enlarge to increase the volume of blood pumped per beat. If you don't do cardiovascular exercise, I wouldn't say the heart atrophies, but it's definitely the chambers do not get larger and they stay smaller, or they even can get a tiny bit smaller because there's no demand for more blood. Therefore, the heart has to beat more often per minute. This is a way that you can kind of tell when someone's in great shape or not. Most athletes will have a resting heart rate below 60 beats per minute. A very highly trained endurance athlete may even have a heart rate of 40 and even sometimes 30 beats per minute. That's extremely, extremely well-trained individuals. I think Lance Armstrong's lowest resting heart rate was measured at about 30 to 32 beats per minute. He was one of the best cyclists for his time, regardless of how his career ended. But 30 beats per minute is an extremely, extremely low resting heart rate. If you did some math there, you can find out about how much his stroke volume was. But Kobe Bryant had a resting heart rate of around 46 beats per minute. And those are the two main examples I typically give because they're both in great shape. But obviously, the endurance level of cycling is a lot higher than the endurance level of basketball. And the reason I say that is because cyclists, cycle for maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 to 8 hours at a time, especially in a big endurance race like the Tour de France. To where basketball players typically only play maybe 1 to 2 hours, 5 times a week, maybe more if you're a professional athlete. Because of that more high intensity work that they have to do, they shouldn't be doing as much to where the low impact cycling they could do for longer periods of time. Anyways, that's my example. And let's move on to slide number 4 and talk about the adaptations to the respiratory system, the heart or the lungs and the respiratory airways. So adaptations from cardiorespiratory exercise to the respiratory system include things like increased ventilation of the alveoli. So the sacs that fill with air in your lungs basically get more use and therefore higher levels of ventilation, meaning more oxygen and gas exchange. Increased tidal volume, which is, we'll say, increased or we'll say total amount of oxygen per breath that you can absorb. That basically leads to better oxygen delivery at all times. And then also the respiratory muscles get a good workout or get a good adaptation as well, in the sense that the muscles that help for inspiration or breathing in is they pull the ribcage upward. That's the sternocleidomastoid, scalenes, and serratus anterior. Those get more effective at assisting with the breathing process. And muscles for expiration, which typically you don't need to forcefully exhale. Exhalation or expiration is going to be involuntary, typically, unless you need to blow hard, in which the they pull the ribcage down. That's the rectus abdominis and quadratus lumborum. So those are the main adaptations for the respiratory system. You'll become a better breather. You'll feel less winded. And a lot of times people. You know, really judge their in-shapeness or how in shape they are by, you know, they walk up a flight of stairs. Are they breathing heavy or are they not? And if you can easily run walk upstairs and stuff without being out of breath, that's, you can consider yourself in decent shape. That's one test, you know, for some people. And you could ask your clients, you know, when they're, if they're out of shape and kind of how they would judge being in shape. And they may give you a great, great indication of this is what I want, meaning I want to be able to run around with my grandkids and not feel extremely winded. So that gives you something to train for specifically. All right, continuing on with the respiratory system. Basically, we're looking at the time required to increase aerobic capacity, time required to increase aerobic capacity. Aerobic capacity is basically going to be the ability to or basically the capacity of your lungs and breathing system to provide the body with enough oxygen. That's measured via your VO2 max. And typically, a VO2 max is going to plateau around 6 months of consistent training. Meaning, if you're a marathon runner and you've been training for 5-6 years or so, it's probably going to be good to switch things up to try to increase that VO2 max by adjusting your training program. Don't just go running, you know, include other things. Maybe some interval training, maybe some other modalities of training that assist with the legs and running. But the ventilatory threshold can grow for years. Remember, the ventilatory threshold is the point at which your breathing needs to increase rapidly in order to continue the intensity of activity level that you're performing. Other physiological adaptations from steady state or interval-based exercise is going to be when people hit their stride in a run, it usually takes about 3 to 4 minutes for the oxidative and aerobic energy systems to really get that person comfortable at a certain steady state. Right when you begin running, if you start a race, the first 2 to 3 minutes are pretty brutal usually, but then you can find your run and your stride around that 3 to 4 minute time, and that becomes your steady state base, more or less. Tip around that is that a steady state running program includes the adaptation of increased red blood cell count. The reason why I bring that up is because, well, you need to know it for the test, but one of the adaptations that's important to know is that red blood cells carry oxygen to the cells of the body, and more red blood cells mean better, higher oxygen delivery. Okay, and that's why it directly relates to aerobic capacity, because the more oxygen you can deliver to the body, or the more red blood cells you have, the more oxygen you can deliver to the body. All right, and the rate of oxygen uptake, the rate of O2 uptake, which is a VO2, heart rate, cardiac output, ventilation, blood lactate concentration, and body temperature all reach stable levels after a short period of time, and that's that, you know, 3 to 4 minute stride or we'll say after that first 3 to 4 minutes of cardiorespiratory activity, you start to feel like you can maintain that level for longer periods of time. That's the reason why. There's all those right up there. All right, and then interval training yields similar or even greater results. I've had clients training for marathons. I've had clients training for long distance events, triathlons, Olympic triathlons, Ironman triathlons. One of the most important things for them to do, besides performing the activities that are in their race or their given race, is to work on interval training that can assist them with increasing their lactate threshold. Basically, their tolerance for the buildup of lactate. That's kind of very, very closely related to the VT2 or the ventilatory threshold 2. And I highly encourage that if you have someone performing steady state exercise for an event, as a personal trainer, you should also incorporate maybe once or twice a week some high intensity interval training, maybe even in the same activity, like some sprints if they're doing a running race, or some swim sprints if they're doing a swimming race, or even some bicycle sprints if they're doing a bike race, or all three if they're doing a triathlon. Okay. All right, so let's move on to slide number 6. Components of a cardio respiratory workout. So what makes up a cardiovascular workout? There's some components laid out there for you. First, we have the warm-up, we have the conditioning phase, and the cool-down. So the warm-up is going to be about 5 to 10 minutes long, and basically it's going to prepare the body for exercise. And the harder the conditioning phase, or the older the exerciser, typically means the more extensive the warm-up, okay? So if you're going really for a good amount of time, you may need to do a warm up for a little bit longer period of time. Next, you have the conditioning phase. So the conditioning phase is going to basically be the main workout phase. We'd call it the work phase of the cardiorespiratory workout. And there is something called cardiovascular drift, which is a gradual increase in heart rate response during steady state bout of exercise. So basically what this means is that you're going to start off at a steady state area of cardio. And even though you're staying at that exact same steady state for 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes, the heart rate's slowly going to creep up during that workout, even though it's the exact same intensity. That's basically the body's energy system slowly depleting, and your heart needs to work a little harder to maintain that same intensity level. People usually hit their wall when their heart rate goes to a point at which is not sustainable for that steady state bout of exercise. You could obviously increase that cardiovascular, or decrease the amount of cardiovascular drift you have by working out more or doing cardiorespiratory training more, but that's called cardiovascular drift. Keep that in mind. And also, higher intensity intervals recruit higher levels of type 2 muscle fibers, and are still considered aerobic overall, because the recovery is typically all 100% aerobic recovery, meaning when you're resting there in between the intervals, your aerobic energy system is reproducing and providing the reserves and energy. And then you also have a cool down. The cool down is going to be the after the work phase is completed. You want to just slowly return your body to normal, or they say 5 to 10 minutes of gradually reducing your work output towards a low intensity or towards the resting state. All right, let's move over to slide number 7 as far as guidelines for health, fitness, and fat loss, and specifically kind of talking about programming for cardiorespiratory training. They are going to specifically use what's called the FITTE model, or the FIT model, for programming cardiorespiratory exercise. What is the FIT model? It is made up of frequency, intensity, time, type, and enjoyable or enjoyability. And let's go ahead and go over these as we get through these next slides. But frequency is going to be the number of workouts per week. Intensity is going to be the difficulty of exercise, meaning how hard are you going, what's the intensity level. Maybe that can be measured in heart rate, that can be measured in VO2 max, ventilatory threshold, lots of different things. Time, how long is the workout? Okay, pretty simple there. Is it 1 hour? Is it 30 minutes? Is it 5 minutes? Is it interval style? Who knows? The type, yeah, what exercise is being performed? Are you swimming? Are you running? Are you jogging? Are you doing sprints? Are you doing a circuit training? Lots of different types of cardiorespiratory exercise available. And then the enjoyability or enjoyable, basically, does the person like what they're doing? One of the biggest tips I can do to ensure adherence to a cardiorespiratory training program is the fact that if somebody enjoys it, they're more likely to do it. Okay? Personal trainers that just stick their clients on a treadmill and without asking them if they enjoy a treadmill is going, it's not going to be very likely that for them to continue to want to use that treadmill because it's so boring. Unless, you know, let's say you really, really like a TV show, you put that TV show on the treadmill or on an iPad on the treadmill, and then you walk for the length of that TV show. That's something that can help. But try to make it as enjoyable as possible. I always recommend that my clients do activities outside of the gym, like play a sport they like. I train people that snowboard. I train people that surf. I train people that play soccer on the weekends. So I encourage those sort of activities as their cardiorespiratory work. All right, and then so frequency, let's talk about first. So we're going to kind of give an idea of more or less what each of these, or what makes up each of these FITTE components. So a frequency, and this is for healthy adults. Remember, there's a lot of different guidelines for cardiorespiratory activity in non-healthy individuals, which we'll get into in the special populations chapter. But for moderate intensity, you want to do 5 days per week. If you remember from the beginning chapters, 5 days a week of moderate intensity activity at about 30 minutes per day is what's recommended by the Surgeon General, or by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. Vigorous intensity is at least 3 days per week. And what do you know? If you do a combination of both, 3 to 5 days per week. So you can kind of pick what's best there. But yes, that is most recommended. Pretty easy there for frequency. Let's go to the next slide as we talk about intensity. So intensity, it's kind of a little bit of overkill. They have about 15 pages in the textbook that go over all the different intensity types. My recommendation is utilize the one that's easiest. The two that I recommend is going to be a percentage of maximal heart rate. So 220 minus age, and then use the percentage of maximal heart rate. So if I'm 20 years old, I'm not 20 years old, but if your client is 20 years old, the max heart rate would be 200 beats per minute. Use a percentage of that 200 beats per minute to program cardiorespiratory exercise. So I want you to work out at a steady state cardio that's about 65 to 75% of max heart rate. So I am going to program that person's heart rate at 130 to 150 beats per minute for 30 minutes. Okay, that's an intensity level that you can use. Or if you want to go max effort, I want to get that heart rate as high as I can, up to 180, which is the 90%, and then recover from there. Okay, so use percentage of max heart rate. Obviously, the higher percentage of max heart rate, the higher the intensity. Makes sense. The 0 to 10 scale is usable. Not too often are your clients going to be very good at really knowing where they're at. That's the RPE scale, but you can definitely use that and learn more about that. Just as a heads up, for all special populations and pretty much anyone with any issues, you would want to use the RPE scale. One or 0 to 10 scale, or the Borg scale, 6 to 20 scale. Basically, you just want to keep them at a moderate to low intensity or a comfortable intensity, and RPE is a good way to do that. The other one that I would recommend is using the talk test, and I specifically talked about or listed the fact that you use the talk test for all special populations and beginners. I went to the store and I bought bananas. It's probably the 18th time you've heard me use that example. But I went to the store and I bought bananas. If they don't take a breath during that sentence, they pass the talk test. That is okay. They are in a comfortable range. If they breathe heavily as they say that sentence, they are not in an as comfortable range, and you can lower the intensity. That's one way. Other ways to measure intensity include VO2 max, total caloric expenditure. CrossFit uses caloric expenditure as some guidelines for their exercises. And for instance, rowing for 12 calories. The intensity level there is going to be measured by their total output of work. And then you also have things like blood lactate, but you have to use a meter to measure blood. You have to take someone's blood to measure blood lactate, so you won't be doing that. And then the three zones, kind of zone one, or the three-zone training model for intensity. You have zone one, which is going to be heart rate. You have heart rate below VT1. Zone two is going to be heart rate between VT1 and VT2. And then zone three, which is a heart rate above VT2. So they do potentially talk about the carbonin method, which is going to be kind of heart rate reserve, they might call it. But it's basically utilizing the resting heart rate to determine a percentage of maximal, or to determine a maximal heart rate. And that also assists in determining a target heart rate. But basically, what the Carbonin method takes into account is that a higher resting heart rate, meaning a person that is in less shape, is going to be associated or going to lead to a lower training heart rate. It's like an inverse relationship. If somebody has a high resting heart rate, they are going to start at easier levels of work. That's why the Carbonin method might be good to take into account. Because if someone that's 20 years old is extremely out of shape and they have a 90 beat per minute heart rate, they probably should start off at a lower intensity. But you can probably tell that just by working with the individual. You don't need a formula to really tell you that you need to start this person off slow. But that is an example there too. All right, moving on to slide number 9. Now we're getting into time. So exercise duration, more or less. How long should that person exercise? Pretty easy. It's the total time spent performing the cardiorespiratory activity. It can be performed continuously or in 10 to 20 minute bouts throughout the day. Once again, the United States Department of Health and Human Services and the Surgeon General recommend that 30 minutes per day, 5 days a week, or 150 minutes total per week of moderate intensity activity. Exercise progression is also kind of used. With exercise progression, they're basically talking about the fact that you never want to allow an individual to do the same thing for too much. Why? Because the principle of overload specifically states that you need to progress the client beyond what they're used to in order to keep achieving results. Okay? And that doesn't mean just continue to have them run longer and longer and more and more and more. It means that you need to vary the type of training to ensure that overload is always present. One of the biggest mistakes runners make is that they just think that, oh, I'm going to run more. I'm going to run longer distances. I'm going to try to run in a faster time the same distance. But what they end up doing is they end up just running more and more and more and more and more, and that creates a repetitive injury of some sort, like knee pain, hip pain, ankle pain, typically in the knees and hips is more common, but that repetitive running is not that good. Switching it up to something like, I'm going to run 1 mile in as short a time as possible is a great way to mix it up. Or I'm going to do sprints, or I'm going to do speed, agility, and quickness training in all planes of motion, different things like that. So always keep in mind that you need to vary the exercise and progress the exercise beyond what somebody's used to. That's principle of overload. Principle of specificity directly says that you want to utilize specific needs and timelines of the client to progress their training. Really just talking about that you want to do what your client or what your client needs. So find out what they need and then program that sort of training. Fartlek training is going to basically be a sequence of different intensities that stress both the aerobic and anaerobic energy systems basically directly training in the intensities of the sport or game. That's basically what I recommend for all types of cardiorespiratory activity. If somebody has a sport that they enjoy and they perform often, you want them to get good at those specifics around that sport. So if it's a power sport, focus on power more in the training. If it's an endurance-based sport like soccer, make sure that they are getting endurance work in for their cardiorespiratory training. So yeah, just keep that in mind. All right, moving over to slide 10, modes or types of cardiorespiratory exercise. Pretty easy. I'm sure you could list 10 if you wanted, but you have equipment-based exercise, stuff like bicycles, indoor in the gym sort of stuff, treadmills, bikes, ellipticals, stair climbers, stuff like that. You have group exercise. In the gym, there's hundreds of types of group exercise from Zumba, dance, all the way through step aerobics and kickboxing and Pilates, tons of different types of group exercise that enhance cardiorespiratory training, spin classes, circuit training, okay, individual circuits that you could set up that stress the cardiorespiratory system, seasonal exercise, skiing in the winter, maybe rowing in the summer, something like that. Water-based activities, swimming, surfing, I'll throw in there. Stand-up paddling is a newer one. Lots of different stuff there. Mind-body exercise, we're going to get into that in Chapter 13 and kind of learn about yoga, tai chi, those sorts of things. Lifestyle exercise, going hiking, or just lifestyle exercise in the sense of running after your kids or activities of daily living. And then outdoor exercise, which are things like hiking or exploring nature, going for walks. But remember, if you ever are performing outdoor activities with a client, always check for potential dangers before setting up the exercise class outdoors. Okay, go scope out where you're going to do the exercise class. Make sure there's no dangers available, and that would ensure safety for you, the trainer, and your clients. That might show up on the test, so definitely understand that. All right, moving to slide number 11. As far as more modes and types of cardiorespiratory exercise, you do want to be aware of other dangers associated with outdoor exercise. Specifically, they talk about heat, cold, and different altitudes, or specifically higher altitudes. In the heat, you basically have a peripheral vasodilation, which is basically going to refer to the blood being brought to the surface of the skin to reduce the internal heat load. That's if somebody's skin turns more of a reddish color. That's them trying to cool themselves. That's good. Okay, you want that. But you have to be aware of the signs and symptoms of heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Okay, specifically, if you are exercising in a hot and humid environment, it is going to be the most dangerous. Okay, so for heat exhaustion, the highest likelihood of someone experiencing heat exhaustion is in a hot and humid environment. We'll say, above 90 degrees and a high humidity, above 80 degrees and a high humidity might put someone at danger for heat exhaustion. So just be aware of that. Heat stroke, same thing. Heat exhaustion or heat stroke is more serious because it is an actual, passing out or something to the point they could even die from it, but be aware. In the cold, just be aware of hypothermia. If it's a really cold day, if it's freezing, it's snowing, it's in a blizzard, obviously, be aware of the dangers of too cold. Frostbite, hypothermia are the main. And then at higher altitudes, also keep in mind that the higher you go in altitude, the less pressure there is putting in the air, the less air pressure. And therefore, the less air pressure, the less forcing of oxygen, or the less that the pressure forces oxygen into the lungs. Meaning less, it's not necessarily that less oxygen is present as you go up, as much as it is there's less pressure to force the oxygen into the lungs. Okay, so just be aware that the O2 level, or the inhalable O2 levels at higher altitudes are going to be lower. This becomes an issue when you talk about performance at higher altitudes, such as like the Mexico City Olympics, we'll say Winter Olympics held on the tops of mountains. Just keep in mind that somebody needs to train at altitude if they're going to have an activity at altitude. And they even said in a few of exercise physiology studies around the adaptations from altitude, they typically are best occurring when you live at altitude and you train at altitude. If you're going to, that basically creates an increased ability to get oxygen into the blood via more red blood cells and other factors that lead to increased oxygen delivery. All right, on to slide number 12. The ACE-IFT cardio training phases, we're just going to go over these to kind of end this. And specifically phase one, we're going to be talking about aerobic base training. This is going to create a positive client experience, or your aim is to create a positive client experience in the sense of introduce them to something easy and nice and that they like. You're focusing on steady state. This is a beginning client. You can gauge this by the talk test is recommended. And then you progress the client out of phase one when they can achieve steady state cardio for 20 to 30 minutes. Some clients will easily be able to do that immediately. Some clients will not be able to do that for months, so keep that in mind. RPE of 3 to 4. Phase two is going to be aerobic efficiency training. Aerobic efficiency training is going to increase are aimed to increase duration and introduce intervals, low light intervals, not too crazy high intervals. And then you're increasing the workload at VT1, and then you also introduce low VT or below VT2 intervals that kind of get closer to VT2 but not all the way up there. So you're basically pushing it a little bit further, introducing some light intervals to enhance the cardiorespiratory efficiency or aerobic efficiency. All right, and final slide, phase three, slide number 13. Phase three is called the anaerobic endurance training phase. And basically that's for those who have a specific endurance-based or performance-based goal around endurance. And that's where you're going to utilize VT2 test to determine the heart rate at VT2. You're trying to hit that heart rate occasionally in interval training. It's going to take increased focus, and be aware that overtraining syndrome can occur if not enough recovery days are taken. So this is very important. When you think about enhancing someone's performance, rest and full recovery are going to be very important. That's why take a day or two off every single week to make sure that full recovery occurs. Once again, to repeat that for something you need to know for sure. Overtraining syndrome can occur if not enough recovery days are taken. That's what ACE believes is the most important thing that leads to overtraining syndrome, is when people don't take enough days off. Okay. All right, phase four is anaerobic power training. Anaerobic power training is basically meant to increase anaerobic power in the sense of being able to sustain power for longer periods of time. This is really high intensity work. Something like, we'll say, football. You can take more snaps, do more reps because you're in better shape. You're in that anaerobic power training shape, we'll say. But what does it do? It improves the phosphagen energy pathways. That's the anaerobic energy system, the ATP-PC, adenosine triphosphate phosphocreatine system. This teaches the person the adaptations occur that buffer large accumulations of blood. Okay, and blood lactate specifically, remove lactate from the blood, assists with continued high performance, and the ability to enhance that leads to better performance. And then most clients won't get into phase four as they do not have extremely high performance needs in that endurance or power area. All right, and then always be aware, as far as cardiorespiratory training goes, of special considerations of youth and older adults. What are youth's main objectives with cardiorespiratory training? It's going to be to emphasize development of motor skills. Okay, so teach them coordination, teach them activities that they'll benefit from in the future. And then older adults, you just keep low intensities, very, very slow or slowly progress to moderate intensities, but don't go too high if they aren't ready for it. All right, guys, that's going to be it for the PowerPoint lecture in chapter 11. I forgot what chapter there we were on for a second. And go ahead and complete the below audio lecture as well as the assignment before listening to the assignment audio explanation and then into the quiz. All right, guys, keep up the good work. Making it on through. Got a few easier chapters coming up in the next bit. So keep that motivation high. We're almost through this. Cheers.